Hello and welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Hardison. Tonight, we're going to break down a thrilling, a Monday Night Football matchup between the Rams and the Bears. Rams got the victory 24-10. I really coasted throughout most of the second half, and this one was not really in doubt. But yeah, I want to go through this game, some quick fantasy football takeaways, and get you all set up with the waiver wire goodness ahead of Week 8. So good stuff. Wild that, you know, we're, 17-week season. It's not technically halfway through, but getting pretty close, and as a situation where we were, not that long ago, just wondering if we were even gonna get NFL football at all. Truly is awesome that we have had seven relatively uninterrupted weeks to this point. So without further ado, let's get started on this Monday night win for the Rams. Really wasn't a situation where they had to work too hard. We're able to get up 24-3 in the third quarter and just kind of coasted from there. Bears had their chances. Oh my goodness, they had their chances, particularly Nick Foles. But in his defense, a lot of these, missed throws he had, kind of had Aaron Donald or at least someone else breathing down his neck, as he was trying to get the ball out. However you want to put it, Darnell Mooney beat Ramsey on a double move. Could have been a potential 96-yard touchdown from inside the 5-yard line, but Foles, kind of airmailed him. And then the last play of the game, Javon Wims got Ramsey on a double move, but Foles wasn't able to put it on him deep. So just kind of one miss opportunity after another downfield. Overall, Foles went 28 for 40, 261 yards, no touchdowns, two interceptions, racked up the air yards. This dude was not afraid to throw it deep, but we just didn't really see all that much success when they wanted to do so, other than when they went to Allen Robinson for 42 yards on a deep one that he caught behind Ramsey, I believe. And then Cole Kmet, their second round, I believe, rookie tight end, had a nice 38-yard catch on a little throwback. That was ended up being a contested catch situation. I'd like to see them get Kmet more involved here. I know rookie tight ends, you got to learn how to receive and block, a position that we never really expect much of any production from, at least in that first year. But, Kmet over these last 2 weeks has been flashing a little bit with some of his ability here, especially in the red zone and in these contested catch situations. So I know Jimmy Graham, former basketball player Jimmy Graham, had his heyday. He's still a big target, and he's not, completely washed just yet. But I do think we're seeing somewhat of a changing of the guard here happening. I still think Jimmy's going to be the number one guy. And honestly, all that Kmet's, role rising is going to do is kind of condense these two and kind of hurt both their values. Don't forget, Jimmy Graham has that no trade clause. So I guess he's not going anywhere anytime soon. But either way, it is good to see the Bears' highest drafted rookie making some plays and at least bringing back some production in this year one from a position that usually we see none. Rest of the way around, wasn't good in this passing game. Allen Robinson, only 4 targets for Allen Robinson. And then at the end of the game, actually might be a situation where A-Rob isn't the concussion protocol. It was like a 4th-and-3 and Foles put it on him. A-Rob caught it. He caught all of his targets on the evening, but situation where it looked like he got hit hard and the trainers or the booth or the eye in the sky, whoever notices shaky players pulled him out of the game. So that was towards the end. We never got an official designation, but make sure you keep an eye on that during this week. Darnell Mooney could have had a big game. Mentioned that, aforementioned overthrow from Foles on the deep one. There's another one early where the safety was in pretty good position, but really just didn't have too many chances on his downfield opportunities. The guy looks good. We have now 2 or 3 instances at least this year of him getting pretty wide open deep, only to not really get a catchable ball. That's just the reality of kind of playing this offense. Same thing with the Jets. When we're talking about, all the air yards Rashad Perryman had last week. It's great to get those air yards, but, there is something to be said about, air yards from someone like Nick Foles versus air yards from someone like Aaron Rodgers. Only other note I have with these receivers, Anthony Miller, only 3 catches for 20 yards, but on the broadcast, he apparently got voted by his teammates most likely to be late to practice. So, the fact that that got out and is public and people are laughing about it just must tell you the kind of stuff that Miller has kind of been doing in regards to practice over the years. He's been a talented player. Whenever he's out there, we see him making plays, and he's someone that, I would certainly love to see get more opportunity than he has over these past 3 seasons. But, hearing stuff like that, you do kind of see why Matt Nagy has been hesitant truly to give him that future role. So I get it. Hey, we're talking about practice here, but it is something to keep in mind. Pass blocking, practice, all that stuff that we don't necessarily care too much about in fantasy football land certainly does matter in real life and can ultimately, as we've seen with Miller over the last few years, impact their opportunity, which obviously impacts their fantasy football production. In this backfield, David Montgomery, 14 carries, 48 yards, 5 catches, 21 yards. If you need 2 yards, David Montgomery is going to get you 3.5 yards. And if you need 5 yards, well, David Montgomery is going to get you those 3.5 yards. So a situation with Montgomery where, you know, we had a fun time on the old Twitter sphere breaking down that old Iowa State graphic. For those that haven't seen it, when Montgomery was in college, ESPN flashes graphic across the screen where it nicknamed Montgomery Frankenstein. It gave him a NFL player comps for every part of his game. So according to ESPN, when he was at Iowa State, Montgomery had the feet of Saquon Barkley, the vision of Le'Veon Bell, the strength of Ezekiel Elliott, and the athleticism of Sony Michel. So kudos to them for, you know, getting that last one and being 1 for 4 on the comparisons. But yeah, just rough for Montgomery. He had a nice 11-yard run at one point, but I mean, come on. The guy will break a couple tackles and look good, but at the end of the day, he's just, you know, not explosive enough to pick up these big chunks. As we saw with those 5 receptions, he's going to remain on the RB2 grid just because of volume alone, but certainly not a situation where I think we can ever expect him to turn in RB1 production, even though he has the opportunity. A little bit similar to David Johnson this year, at least in terms of expectations with the massive workload, but not the same production because he is the guy still. I mean, 38 snaps for Montgomery. Cordero Patterson was number 2 at just 13. Just a situation where, you know, Montgomery going to keep getting fed, but this is a pretty awful Bears offense that we're dealing with here. On the Rams offense, so Jared Goff, 22 for 33, 219 yards, pair of touchdowns. He got one to Josh Reynolds, which was inside the five-yard line, but they basically broke the huddle real quick. Reynolds lined up in the backfield, went out in the flat, and Goff was able to hit him for a touchdown. And second score was just a short little curl to Gerald Everett, which is, I believe, inside the 15-yard line. He broke a tackle and got into the end zone. So really not all that impressive a performance from Goff. He did throw a nice deep ball to Reynolds at one point that just Reynolds wasn't able to come down with. I wouldn't really blame Goff for that. He maybe had a chance to hit Woods deep, but honestly, look, like, we've seen this Bears defense really have their way with Goff over the years, and that kind of was the case tonight, just in terms of big plays. I mean, look, you know, they were able to put up 24 points, and Goff, you know, didn't go out there. No interceptions, only took 2 sacks. He was making good decisions for most of the evening. A win is a win is a win, but it's just kind of another example of why we're not really all that behind 2020 Jared Goff in terms of fantasy asset. I mean, last year we had games where he was legit, you know, flirting with those, like, 50, 60 dropbacks, you know, true Dak Prescott numbers, throwing the ball all over the place, win or loss, but have not seen that same approach this year. This is a run-first offense, and because of that, you know, we're seeing Cooper Kupp only 6 targets, Robert Woods only 5 targets. I mean, none of those guys, only Josh Reynolds with 52 yards, cleared 50 yards in this offense. Gerald Everett still found the score, and, you know, we had Robert Woods chip in 23 rushing yards, and Kupp had 16 rushing yards as well. These are still integral pieces of the offense, but, you know, like, Goff isn't really a weekly... He's not on the QB1 grid at all. He's more of a, you know, low ceiling, I'd say, QB2. And then Kupp and Woods, while these guys have been borderline wide receiver ones over the years, we got to get used to treating them as more top 20 options versus borderline top 10, top 12 plays just because of volume. They're still great players, but we're just not seeing enough opportunity to love these guys in fantasy football land. Credit to Reynolds getting the, you know, team high 8 targets, but I just, you know, he's kind of playing that Brandon Cooks role, but we're still seeing Van Jefferson there. I don't think it's anything sort of consistent that we can really hang our hat on from this number 3 wide receiver in the offense. Was a little bit concerned to see Gerald Everett not get more opportunity. Tyler Higbee was out with a hand injury. Johnny Munt ended up actually leading the way in terms of receiving yards with 47. Everett got the touchdown, 28 yards. I think we'll have bigger weeks. If Higbee does remain sidelined, I'm certainly fine, you know, treating Everett as a borderline tight end one as long as Higbee does remain out. But just realize, again, like Woods, like Kupp, everyone involved in this passing game is just going to be battling volume issues more times than not, unless someone can kind of force Sean McVay and company to put their foot down on the gas. Quickly with this backfield, another situation where, you know, not exactly sure what Cam Akers did to Sean McVay, but just 2 snaps, and these are unofficial numbers right after the game, so excuse me if they do fluctuate a little bit, but you know, at the moment, 2 snaps for Cam Akers, 33 for Daryl Henderson, 26 for Malcolm Brown. So Malcolm Brown's still going out there doing his thing. He had this like 12-yard run where it seemed like he got stopped in the 6-yard line. Just the entire Rams offensive line kept pushing, and so did Brown. He got down to the 1. So you do see flashes where, I mean, Brown is putting up some solid plays, you know, kind of like a Gus Edwards sense where the guy, you know, hey, if the play is designed to go in the B gap, and you know Malcolm Brown's going to be hitting it there hard, might even be, you know, carrying a defender for a little bit, but I just think what we've seen from Daryl Henderson over these past few weeks, I mean, he is the guy that can give them the best chance to, you know, have a dynamic rushing attack. Only had a long of 11 tonight. I mean, wasn't consistently gashing this rush defense, but just as a whole this season, I think we've seen Henderson really emerge as the best back in this backfield. So, hey, credit to McVay. He has been going, you know, with Henderson as a starter, as the leading guy in snaps now back-to-back weeks. With Cam Akers just really out of the picture at this point, it is looking like it's going to be Henderson's backfield more times than not. It would be nice if he was getting, you know, that full-on Todd Gurley role where he's hardly leaving the field, but as it stands, you know, still a guy that we're looking at 15 to 20 touches per week, kind of in that Antonio Gibson type range of, you know, RB2 backs where going to be a little bit game script dependent. We're going to be disappointed some weeks, but we still have a talented player getting 15 plus touches more weeks than not, and that is valuable in fantasy football land. So Rams 24, Bears 10. You know, anytime we have football, it's a fun one, but yeah, maybe not the most exciting primetime game coming off of that Cardinals-Seahawks classic from Sunday night. All right, quick shout out to our sponsor before we get on to some waiver wire stuff. Monkey Knife Fight. So all first time depositors at Monkey Knife Fight that put at least $20 in their account while using promo code PFF will receive a free PFF Edge annual subscription. That's $40 value for just $20, and you'll get the opportunity to turn that $20 into even more money playing daily fantasy and prop games at one of the fastest growing fantasy sports sites in the USA in Monkey Knife Fight. So go to Monkey Knife Fight, deposit your $20 with promo code PFF today to receive your free PFF Edge annual subscription. Thank you, Monkey Knife Fight. All right, everyone, I want to touch on some waiver wire stuff. We're going to have all sorts of, just articles up at PFF, so make sure you check those out. But, you know, I just try to go through Yahoo, ESPN, see who's, who's frequently being added and who some of the people are that are available, you know, in more than 50% of leagues, and just kind of give my opinion on the top guys I'm sure you'll be reading and listening about all throughout the week. So first off, you need to have Chase Edmonds if he is out there. You know, my guy, Hayden Winks at Roto World had a funny tweet saying, you know, if you can take out $1 million mortgage in real life to get enough fab to go get Chase Edmonds, you should probably be doing that. I know it's a bye this week, but with Kenyon Drake expecting to miss a few weeks with a slight tear of a ligament in his ankle, Cardinals treating like a high ankle sprain, it's going to be the Chase Edmonds experience now. And Eno Benjamin will be involved, you know, to some extent, but look, this year, it's been pretty much a 70-30 split between Drake and Edmonds, with Drake taking the lead more weeks than not. Last year, it was more of an 80-90% snap situation, depending on if it was, you know, Drake, David Johnson, or even Edmonds for a week. So I could even see things getting back to more of a 2019 feel, depending on how they trust Benjamin right now. Either way, you know, we're fully expecting Edmonds to have that 60-70% snap role at a minimum. He's earned it. You know, he does everything with the passing game. So worst case scenario, even if they look at, you know, Benjamin as, you know, more of a early down back than perhaps we do, which I truly do not believe will be the case. Edmonds is going to be the one getting the fantasy-friendly passing down work. And look, I mean, we just haven't seen anything from Eno. And this is why all offseason we've been preaching with Latavius Murray, Alexander Mattison, Tony Pollard, and Chase Edmonds. I understand the Mattison thing didn't work out the week we needed it to, but you know what? If Dalvin Cook missed 8 weeks, I do think Mattison would settle in as an RB2 more times than not. But Edmonds, he truly has a chance to give, you know, top 12 RB value the rest of the way, depending on this Drake injury. So truly, if Chase Edmonds is somehow out there, hopefully because you've been listening to this podcast, you already have Edmonds sitting fine on your bench. But if not, go do everything in your power to get Chase Edmonds. If you have $40 left, I would use all $40 to get Chase Edmonds. This is one of those Mike Davis situations where we need to get this guy because he is going to return immediate RB1 value. Rashard Higgins for the Browns, with Odell Beckham Jr. out for the season with the torn ACL, which, you know, cannot stress enough how much that sucks. And quickly, you know, I went on a rant last podcast that released on Monday about, you know, people saying the Browns could be better off without Baker. Baker could be better off without Beckham involved. I mean, look, nobody in the league has had more uncatchable deep ball targets that were deemed to be their quarterback's fault than Beckham over these past 2 years. So I understand if you want to say that, you know, Baker not forcing the ball to this guy or that guy is a little bit better for his progressions and the overall rhythm of the offense. But I just think that, you know, that's not really on Beckham. Just use the guy like the stub wide receiver one he'd be. Odell Beckham would be in any single team in the league's top three wide receiver set. And out there, and you know, come on, he'd be the top one on about 20-25 of these teams. So anyway, Rashard Higgins season now, and look, it's going to be inconsistent. It's been inconsistent with Odell Beckham Jr. I don't think Higgins is all of a sudden going to start supplying, you know, this weekly wide receiver one usage that Beckham did. And I'm expecting, you know, Jarvis Landry to probably start seeing the most targets on the Browns here moving forward. But you know, 12 receivers have at least 25 targets from Baker Mayfield during his career, and Higgins at 10.92 adjusted yards per target is the only wide receiver average averaging over even 8 adjusted yards per target. So situation where Baker and Higgins have really shown some great chemistry over the years. And now with him, you know, pretty much cemented as a number two wide receiver, if not number two pass game option in this offense, I think he's going to be, you know, a weekly upside wide receiver 3 potential. So this is a good guy you want to have on your bench. Again, I'm, you know, if you're out there and you have several good wide receivers, I get you're not going to be rushing to start Higgins every week, but, you know, kind of like T. Higgins, kind of like, you know, some of these other guys we've been referencing over the weeks that, you know, hey, you can do worse than someone that's going to be out there on the field for most of the time and, you know, looking at a true top two spot in their offense. Tim Patrick was another one we've been talking about where I know it's not the sexiest pick, but, you know, when we get these bye weeks, when we get these injuries coming up, these are types of players that you feel a little bit better going to the well than, you know, whoever you can swoop up on the waiver wire during that specific week. Some running backs here with the Baltimore Ravens. So J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards. I like taking a chance on Dobbins here. We saw this with DeAndre Swift after the Lions bye. And now with the Ravens coming off the bye, you know, I think if we're going to see a shift in this backfield, it would be here in this week 8 matchup against the Steelers. Huge game. And look, I mean, Gus Edwards has been good. Mark Ingram is banged up right now. It sounds like he should be able to get out there. But if this is going to be a 3-RB committee still, I don't see, you know, anyone just completely hitting the bench out of this trio. Even if Ingram is out, I can see Justice Hill getting in the fold. But there is a chance, I think the last chance effort for Dobbins to, you know, really be relevant in 2020 is for them, given that, you know, 2019 Mark Ingram role, 12 to 15 carries per game, another 2 to 3 targets, let him do his thing, you know, in between Lamar Jackson runs. So we'll see if he gets there. If he's out there on the waiver wire, you know, it's maybe in, you know, shallower leagues. Otherwise, he'll probably be on benches, particularly in any former dynasty, obviously. But if you see him out there, you know, kind of like DeAndre Swift was a nice pickup a couple weeks ago, I do think giving Dobbins another chance with the potential for a new look backfield here coming out of the bye could pay some dividends. Either way, though, you know, Dynasty, don't be freaking out, because I truly think Dobbins could be flirting with RB1 status as early as 2021, depending on if the Ravens cut ties with Ingram this offseason. Nelson Agholor is someone that's kind of in that Rashard Higgins camp where I understand that you're not going to be rushing to start this dude every week, but look, this Raiders offense is legit, and that makes, you know, the accessory parts of the offense much better fantasy options than in the past. I mean, truly, I cannot stop saying good things about Derek Carr. I don't get it either, everyone, but 2020, you know, weird things happen. This year, Derek Carr has 5 games with 250-plus passing yards and at least 2 touchdowns. He only had 4 such games all of last season, only 3 such games in 2018, and only 3 such games in 2017. So we're looking at a situation where if Baker keeps this up, he could legit have more games with 250 plus passing yards and 2 touchdowns in 2020 as he had in 2017 through 2019 combined. So he is legit playing well. You know, he took some big hits at the end of that Buccaneers game, showed a lot of toughness out there. You know, hey, he's doing his thing. Henry Ruggs, you know, if Brian Edwards comes back, it's going to hurt Agholor, but Agholor had 9 targets last week and Henry Ruggs only had 3. I don't get it, but credit to Nelson Agholor for playing some good ball. Look, everyone, we saw this happen with Rashad Perryman. Like, just because someone is bad at football for a certain stretch doesn't mean they can't get better. And, you know, with 4 games with a full-time role, we've seen Agholor go 3 catches, 32 yards, 4 catches, 44 yards and a touchdown, 2 catches, 67 yards and a touchdown, and most recently 5 catches, 107 yards and a score. Had a nullified 55-yard score along the way. I mean, look, it's a good to great passing game some of these weeks, honestly, depending on the matchup. And I think, you know, having Agholor out there playing 80, 90% snaps, again, you can do worse filling in, you know, some of these flex spots than someone in a good offense that's going to be out there on the field almost every single dropback. Now talking about the 49ers here, we got a lot to go over. So Debo Samuel with a hamstring injury is going to be out this week, most likely next as well. Jeff Wilson with an ankle injury is joining Raheem Mostert on IR. There is an outside chance that Tevin Coleman is able to return in this spot. So news on Jerick McKinnon not playing last week. This is straight from Kyle Shanahan. Shanahan said that the 49ers were planning to rest Jerick McKinnon all along since McKinnon had a large workload earlier in the season. Great. We did see McKinnon returning kicks in weeks 1 and 2, and he hasn't done that since, but that was kind of what got me on him originally, you know, potentially having that big role with Raheem Mostert out the first time. You know, we were kind of bullish on his chances last week of getting that big time role because Debo was back and Kittle was back, and we didn't see that, you know, in the first time that Mostert was out. But look, you know, with these current injuries, if we'll say Coleman's out this week, if we're assuming that Kittle's number one option, I think Brandon Ayuk is probably number two. This rookie is legit good, fam. And then after that, probably McKinnon. I mean, we see with Hasty, they don't trust Hasty to be out there every single snap. He has only had one snap as a pass blocker all season. I think it's similar to kind of what we're seeing with A.J. Dillon in Green Bay, although Hasty's actually, you know, put on some good film and had some solid runs. So I just mean that, you know, it's a situation where I don't think they've done enough with the team in the pass game to kind of get that three down role where they're trusted to be out there for more snaps and not. So Hasty, he could flirt with double digit carries, but, you know, Coleman's going to be back sooner rather than later. I think Coleman immediately plays over Hasty. I mean, we just had Shanahan say that Wilson played over Hasty and McKinnon because they just like, you know, his feel and he's been in the offense longer. So fully expect Tevin Coleman to play over Hasty, whether or not, you know, Coleman is even better than Hasty at this point in their career. But McKinnon could really be get that enhanced lead back role this week if Coleman stays sidelined. So if it's all three of them, I do think Coleman, you know, works as a lead back. But if it's only two of them, I think McKinnon could get that more enhanced kind of scat back 60% snap role and flirt with, you know, 10 to 15 overall touches. So out of the entire group, I would say if Brandon Ayuk is on your waivers, make sure you get this dude. I doubt he is, you know, in too many leagues. But with the running backs, not expecting a ton from Coleman once he comes back. But someone cuts ties with McKinnon before this week and we get more news on Coleman, I would be willing to go with McKinnon, treat him as kind of a borderline RB2 in week 8. Quickly, Trey Burton. Look, Doug Peterson loves his former tight end. He managed to get, you know, those two touchdowns thanks to that one rush attempt back in week 6. But just realize on this offense, Mo Alie-Cox has a knee injury. When he's back, he's going to steal away snaps and targets alike. Jack Doyle is still starting and playing the most. This is a three tight end situation in a run first offense. You know, hey, Burton was great in that week, but that was more because of, you know, DFS pricing and stuff. And hey, he was good in season long too. I get it. Maybe he keeps it up and keeps on scoring, but ultimately this is a three tight end committee. You know, if one of the guys is out, then okay, we can treat Burton or Mo Alie-Cox as, you know, kind of a touchdown dependent tight end too, but not a situation I think we should be targeting with any amount of, you know, capital that we want to invest in the guy. With the Seahawks backfield, so this is going to mainly be a pass for me. I mean, I would rather have Hasty, I think, or even McKinnon, especially over any of these Seattle backs, because it's just a mess right now. Chris Carson is week to week with a midfoot sprain. Expect to be back sooner rather than later. And I mean, this dude is just so freaking tough, so wouldn't be shocked if he does only end up missing a week or so. Coach Pete Carroll said Rashad Penny is getting closer, but he's probably not going to return in week 8 from the PUP. But it sounds like a situation where, you know, week 10, week 11, Penny could be back in action. Carlos Hyde has a tight hamstring, so we don't know about his status. Travis Homer has a knee bruise, so it sounds like that, you know, he's not 100%, although Carroll didn't make it sound like it was too intense. So that could feasibly leave DJ Dallas as the lone healthy back for the Seahawks offense. I mean, look, though, this situation is far from clear. They could certainly add someone. You know, hey, Marshawn Lynch, what's up, man? I understand Marshawn isn't, you know, putting too much explosiveness forward these days, excuse me, but you know, it would be fun to see. I love when that guy can just get out there and get more involved in all of our lives, because it always puts a smile on my face, and I'm sure plenty more. But yeah, with this backfield again, Homer, Hyde, Dallas, Penny, with Dallas being the only healthy one. You know, I believe he blew a pretty brutal pass block last game. I have to go back and watch a little bit closer. But if they're all healthy, if Carson's out and the rest of these guys are healthy, Carlos Hyde could be, you know, a legit top 20 option just based on volume alone. But he's not going to have as much pass down work with Homer and Dallas involved as, you know, Carson would in this role. And I think just with that tight hamstring, it does even bring in the question how much early down work Hyde is capable of handling as well. So, you know, volume induced, potential borderline RB2 for Hyde. But, you know, just worry about this injury. And again, even if you do get this 1 week out of Hyde, I think Penny and Carson, to a much more extent, are going to be back sooner rather than later. So, you know, would not be blowing my fab by any stretch of the imagination on any of the Seahawks backs. But if you need a 1 week, spot starter, I would go with Hyde. Jalen Reagor with the Eagles, go get him if he is available, people. He's expected to maybe not be back this week, and Eagles have a week 9 bye, but you look at their schedule after the bye: Giants, Browns, Seahawks, Packers, Saints, Cardinals, and the Dallas Cowboys Swiss cheese defense in the Fantasy Football Championship Sunday, week 16. So Wentz has been playing much better lately. All his skill position, talents are pretty much out, but if we add Reagor to the equation, man, he played 85% of the offensive snaps in week 2 before tearing the UCL in his right thumb. He's made some big plays at once already. You see why they were so high on him and, you know, felt the need to draft him in the first round. I think Fulham could still stay out there, even if Jeffrey comes back, but they're going to find find room for Rager on the field. And I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, maybe even Fulgham remains the number one target getter, but Rager is capable of making the most of his opportunities. If he is out there, people, seriously, go get Jalen Rager. Might not even cost you that much this week because, again, he's looking questionable for this Sunday night, and then the Eagles have a week nine bye, but could be, you know, a prime stash for this stretch down the end that, again, is filled with fantasy-friendly defenses to fire him up against. Quickly, Giovanni Bernard, Jamal Williams, obviously need to get these guys if they are available. Still not sure on the target of Joe Mixon or Aaron Jones. It doesn't sound like either guy is dealing, you know, with this too brutal of an injury that's going to keep him sidelined for multiple weeks. But, you know, both Gio and Jamal Williams are playing 75% plus snaps, truly featured over their team's backup running backs. Expect this with Jamal Williams, not so much with Gio. But you know what? That's the world we're living in. Both these guys are going to be legit RB2 options, and to Williams' credit, maybe even closer to an RB1 if they're starting. Starters stay sidelined. Four more here. I want to touch on them. We'll get out of here, everyone. Sterling Shepard, he's another guy that I would really recommend trying to get, you know, if possible, if he's available. Cool stat from ESPN's Mike Clay. Shepard's been targeted at least six times in 18 consecutive games if you remove his injury-shortened week two performance from 2020. So at the start of training camp, I mean, and just throughout it, honestly, Shepard seemed like he was going to be the number one receiver. We have seen this Jason Garrett offense, I mean, them not prioritize Golden Tate and Darius Slayton. While he can kind of be a pure number one, I think they do like him a little bit more in that field stretcher role. So Shepard, you know, based on what we saw last week and based on what we've seen in the past, this guy truly is capable of running some just some awesome routes from all over the field. He can get open at ease. Him and Daniel Jones have shown some solid chemistry, you know, in their short time together. And he does seem like, you know, the leader to potentially lead this god-awful Giants offense in targets here moving forward. With the Jets, LaMichael Perine, not someone I'm prioritizing, but, you know, you could do worse than it. It's one of these running backs getting, you know, 10 to 15 touches on a weekly basis. It's kind of like the DeAndre Swift situation where Perine, hey, maybe things, you know, keep going up for him. He plays well and he's able to kind of carve out this low-end weekly RB2 role. But, you know, Swift's got AP ahead of him. Perine has Frank Gore. And, you know, I don't see either of those situations necessarily changing anytime soon. The main difference between these guys that's really hurting Perine is obviously the Jets should not be compared in the slightest to the Lions or really any other offense other than maybe the Dakless Cowboys, just in terms of how bad they have been throughout this season. So, you know, anyone associated with the Jets is pretty puke other than Jamison Crowder. I get it. It's not a workhorse role. You know, I think Perine is probably going to top out as an RB3, but hey, you know, if you're desperate, you could do worse than someone getting 10 to 15 touches per week. Wayne Gallman could be a legit potential starter if Devontae Freeman is out. I still haven't heard how legit this ankle injury that Freeman suffered last Thursday night is, but you know, it would be the Wayne Gallman show, I think, if Freeman's out. They have only been using Deion Lewis as, you know, this 15-20% scat back, and yeah, it's going to be Gallman, you know, the one getting 15-20 carries per week. He will not be a recommended start on Monday night against the Buccaneers juggernaut of a run defense, but you know, again, like some of these other guys where, you know, Perine's only maybe getting 10-15 touches per week, Gallman, if Freeman's out, could be pushing 20 more times than not. So I would say he would be maybe the under the radar guy that people are missing a little bit. Finally, last two tight ends that I think you can get and that are fine flyers. I probably wouldn't. I would definitely prioritize these guys over Trey Burton, excuse me. But yeah, Harrison Bryant and Richard Rodgers from the Eagles. I think I would go Harrison Bryant over Rodgers. And look, you know, these are situations where we have the Browns, the Eagles, and I'd also throw the Vikings, Texans, and maybe Seahawks in there, where if we get tight ends taken out of the pictures, you know, and it clears up these kind of muddled tight end rooms, don't be afraid to help cover a bye with these dudes. You know, Bryant, two touchdowns last week. We've kind of seen Baker going in and just feeding him early and often throughout the season. It seems like he does really trust him more than David Njoku, even if Njoku also had a nice touchdown and was out there a bit too. I guess this week, okay, let me backtrack here. Richard Rodgers should be the priority flyer this week because they're facing the Dallas Cowboys. And, you know, honestly, in fantasy football, our two main rules, at least in 2020, are chase opportunity over talent and play players that are facing the Dallas Cowboys defense, because that is going to lead us to all sorts of success. So Richard Rodgers this week, moving forward, if Austin Hooper remains out, you know, I would probably like Harrison Bryant over an extended stretch. But, you know, Carson Wentz playing better. We've seen him over the years with Ertz and to a lesser extent Goddard just fill up that stat strategy, and that guy is Richard Rodgers for right now. So wild times. You know, I did not expect Rodgers to be arguably the best tight end out there on waivers this week, but I do think in this matchup, in this offense, we should be prioritizing Richard Rodgers as, you know, probably the priority add of the week at the tight end position. So that's going to do it for me, everyone. Thank you. One more quick shout out before we get out of here, though. PFF and Sunday Night Football's Chris Collinsworth is teaming up with one of the best players on and off the field, 49ers All-Pro corner Richard Sherman. The Chris Collinsworth podcast featuring Richard Sherman is available now wherever you find your podcast. They'll provide the most interesting football conversation in sports every single week, and sometimes that means the discussion will venture off the field too. Additionally, Chris will be taking a deep dive into the game of football as he sees it, inviting in the best and brightest to talk about everything that is happening in the great game of football. So mark your calendars. You do not want to miss the best 60 minutes of insight this season. All right, everyone, that's going to do it for this edition of the Pro Football Focus Fantasy Football Podcast. Thank you for listening. As always, you know, I'm shooting these out on the old Twitter sphere at iHeart. It's I-H-A-R-T-I-T-Z every morning. We got these published on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Check back in tomorrow going over all 14 Week 8 games with my buddy Dwayne McFarland. That should be a good one. And then on Thursday, we'll have another episode out with some, you know, top fantasy football storylines before finishing off the week with a quick recap of Thursday Night Football and some injuries to monitor ahead of Sunday. So thank you for listening. As always, I'm Ian Harris. This has been the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. And until next time, take care, everybody.